War veterans are among those speaking out against sending in U.S. troops into Baghdad. Gulf War veteran Eric Gustafson spoke recently at the Social Forum to Stop the War Against Iraq at American University in Washington.
I want you to connect to the Iraqi people as best you can, opening up a window to the families, the communities, the cities, the culture, and the incredible history, a history that goes back thousands upon thousands of years prior to any history on these shores. One of the first civilizations, some of the first written language, the first code of law, as well as the birthplace of the prophet Abraham and the beginning of the monotheistic tradition that is now celebrated by the three major religions of the world, the Judeo-Christian and Islamic faiths. That is the kind of indebtedness we owe this part of the world. And it is amazing when instruments of destruction, to see where civilization has led us, that it is the highest form of technology, instruments of death, F-16s, other warplanes, flying over the ruins of the first civilizations on this planet. That's the incredible irony. In 1258, Baghdad, prior to that period, was an incredibly beautiful city. It was the crossroads of so many different cultures. You had the Silk Route pass through Baghdad. You had philanthropic institutions, some of the first universities, some of the first hospitals. Just imagine an incredibly beautiful city. And that was brutally cut short in 1258 by the sack of Baghdad, Huluga and the Mongol invaders. And they swept into the city and they destroyed everything. That is burned into the memory of the Iraqi people. And I want to convey the words of a Persian traveler who came across Baghdad shortly after it was destroyed. And those words, I hope, will echo in your heart, because that is what Iraqis feel now, that the new Huluga, the new Mongol invaders, will be now American forces when they lay siege to Baghdad if we do not stop this war. This Persian traveler wrote home, "You ask me about the sack of Baghdad. It is so horrible, there are no words to describe it. I wish I had died and not seen how these butchers have destroyed these treasures of knowledge, of learning. I thought I understood the world, but this Holocaust is so strange and pointless that I'm struck dumb." We have the ability, the power, to prevent this war. I continue to say this as someone who's done this work for many years, and we all have seen wars waged in just the last few years. Every 2 years, it seems that our country engages in another major war. I will say this again, if there was ever a war that we could stop, it's this one. And do not be defeated. If there's a power that the administration has, it's conveying a sense of inevitability. And as soon as you believe that, then you have already defeated yourself and you can no longer meaningfully contribute to the work that is essential to stopping the war. So find within your heart the ability to resist that kind of inevitability. And I can tell you, I know from the outside looking in, an external observer looks to Washington, looks to what the administration is doing, people like Dick Cheney and other prominent hardliners who have been pushing this war now for over a year. The feeling is that it's well choreographed, the administration is united, and there's nothing to stop the juggernaut. From the inside, and I've seen this with the administration, I've seen this in Congress, Washington remains fundamentally divided. The establishment remains fundamentally divided. You have the New York Times, which I never expected to be championing a cause of restraint, of caution, that there should not be a war. Op-eds, articles, repeatedly. You have opinion polls showing that the American public, while they do support the removal of Saddam Hussein, which is a no-brainer for most Americans, obviously Iraq would be a better place, the world would be a better place if Saddam were gone. However, it is the question of the means. And there you lose American support. The American people do not support a preemptive unilateral strike against Iraq. The idea that we would throw 350 years of international law, a foundation of international law intended to make the world a safer place, with presidents as Eisenhower, Truman, FDR, building that foundation to make the world a safer place. And we're about to undo all of that international law, the very UN Charter, going against U.S. public law because the UN Charter is U.S. public law. That is what we are facing. And for what? No convincing case has been made. Absolutely no convincing case has been made.
Eric Gustafson, Gulf War veteran and executive director of the Education for Peace in Iraq Center. When four soldiers trained in the airborne and special operations units at Fort Bragg Army Base in North Carolina returned from a tour of duty in Afghanistan, they were disoriented and unable to cope with reentering everyday life. In a period of 6 weeks, these four men killed their wives. Two of the men then killed themselves. Houston writer and poet Andrea Roberts of Voices Breaking Boundaries at KPFT shares her vision of what took place between one of these soldiers' husbands and his wife during one of the thousands of episodes of military domestic violence each year.
It's for the little guy. Keep telling myself that, trudging through these dunes, squirting this sloppy Joe out this silver pouch, tasteless except for the government issue Tabasco. And I tried to tell her I just wanted to come home to a decent meal. I've been squirting sloppy Joe and spaghetti that tastes like mush. For months, my meals have been filled with sand and rocks. Sometimes I can't tell the sloppy Joe from the brains, and I can't tell the spaghetti and meatballs from the hearts, the arms, the eyes. She asked me, "What are you fighting for?" For meat and potatoes, for laying on my back instead of my stomach, for my wife and my children. Now I'm fighting to sleep with her and what I just had to do in a place I can hardly pronounce. They call us Special Forces or Delta Force, but you know what that means? I'm responsible for doing what they don't want to answer for back home. Here at Fort Bragg, the counselors here, Bush, none of them want to answer for the dead kids. Dead Afghan women's head wraps I used to stop my buddies from bleeding. Sometimes, when my wife comes out the shower with a towel on her head, I can't see her, I just see those women. That night, I just saw one of those women. I got so tired of seeing women that kept themselves from me, covered and scared. Well, the greatest generation, the Vietnam vets, got their good time girls. Afghanistan women are player haters, man. Nothing, absolutely nothing. Then I come back here and my wife, my Marilyn, ran from me with that towel on her head. Well, here's the recon on life back here, counselor. We go off to save them, but everyone's a spy. Everyone's a traitor when we return. So I had to kill her. Like those Afghan women, she kept herself from me. She always wanted to get too close, to know too much. My wife, she wanted to know too much. We didn't speak when he was here, didn't write when he was away, and now neither of us will speak again. Fort Bragg is always loud, and it's always quiet. When he came back to the base, he didn't say nothing. He was like a stone. And there's a difference, you know, between a stone and a rock. I thought 'cause I had a soldier for a husband, I had a rock. But he proved to be a stone. He'd sit alone watching TV, and then he'd lie next to me at night, tossing and turning. That's when I could get him to bed before my babies and me. I'd come out the shower, and he'd just start screaming, "You gotta follow orders. I don't care. You gotta follow orders." Then that night, he, Cedric, the stone, hurled himself at me. Started talking really slow for an hour or so, just telling me all the stuff he had to do, the killing, the bombing, the women and children dead. I can trust no one. I can tell no one the truth. He just kept rocking and staring, saying it over and over. I can trust no one. I can tell no one the truth. So I thought I was helping him, you know, by listening. But he just turned to me with this blank look on his face. I remember that look whenever my mama tried to tell Daddy he was doing something wrong or he wasn't bringing home enough money. I just remember him looking the way Cedric did then. If you can't come home and tell your wife or anybody what you've just been through, then what are you fighting for, honey? That's what I said to him, but Cedric was a stone, and when he was away, I wished, I hoped, and prayed the army would send me back a rock, but I got a stone. Hard and mean, he threw himself, a stone, at my questions. He took the towel off my head and started cradling that wet towel like he used to hold me, balled himself up on the bed with it. I took it, well, I tried to take it from him, but he reached under the pillow and took out his government issue, and any hope for a rock shattered the stone and me.
Houston writer and poet Andrea Roberts. More than 10 organizations representing thousands of Americans across the U.S. gather today on Capitol Hill. They told Congress they will not be intimidated into supporting the war on Iraq and pledged to resist it. Gordon Clark.
If the United States sends combat troops, invades by proxy, bombs, or otherwise significantly escalates its intervention in Iraq, I pledge to join with others to engage in acts of nonviolent civil disobedience at U.S. federal facilities, congressional offices, military installations, and other appropriate sites. I pledge to engage in nonviolent civil disobedience in order to prevent or halt the death and destruction such U.S. military action causes the people of Iraq. And people who are signing this in addition agree to the following nonviolent guidelines in opposing the war in Iraq. Number one, our attitude will be one of openness and respect toward all we encounter in our actions. Number two, we will use no violence, verbal or physical, toward any person. Number three, we will not destroy or damage any property. Number four, we will carry no weapons. Number five, we will bring no drugs or alcohol other than for medicinal purposes. And number six, we will not run or resist arrest. We will remain accountable for our actions as a means of bearing our witness to the injustice of this war. That is the Iraq Pledge of Resistance, which people are now signing here and around the country. I'm Gordon Clark, National Coordinator of the Iraq Pledge of Resistance.
Kevin Martin, the Executive Director of Peace Action.
There are some who oppose this war who have suggested that we ought to deliver plastic backbones to people in Congress to encourage them to stand up to Mr. Bush's war. But I actually think we should instead be delivering hearing aids, because clearly the members of Congress have not heard the American people. Those of us who oppose this war therefore have no choice but to ratchet up our tactics and to call on the nonviolent traditions of Gandhi and King and Thoreau and Dorothy Day and Rosa Parks and Benjamin Spock, the former chairman of my organization. We will do this in a nonviolent way, but in a militant and serious way, as Gordon said, putting our lives and freedom at stake to protect the innocent lives of people in Iraq.
Another organization which is an initial sponsor of this and does amazing work in Iraq, trying to help the people and end the sanctions for a decade now, is Voices in the Wilderness. Representing them, Art Laffin.
We must do everything we can to stop this war from occurring before it happens, from refusing to pay war taxes, to encouraging soldiers to become conscientious objectors, to engaging in sit-ins and direct actions at congressional offices and at the White House, as well as endorsing this Iraq peace pledge. We must act on behalf of the Iraqi people as if they were members of our own blood family. We must end this ongoing slaughter of the Iraqi people.
Pledging to commit civil disobedience is a serious act, and it is an act to violate the law in hopes of preventing a greater evil. Helping us with this is going to be the National Lawyers Guild, the Executive Vice President of the National Lawyers Guild, Kit Gage.
If at this time where we face a war, we don't learn from our history, we will have made an enormous mistake. The National Lawyers Guild is a 67-year-old organization that has defended political dissent movements for its entire history. It was formed when African Americans could not be members of the bar. It has been integral to the civil rights movement. It was integral as part of the movement to stop the Vietnam War. It will be integral to these activities today. We understand at the National Lawyers Guild that a government whose policies are only made by policymakers and not by the people is a government that is not truly representative and that is not following the Constitution. The government, however, has a long history of going after people who disagree with its policies. It views them as criminals merely for their beliefs. It particularly views them as criminals when they dare to sit down, when they dare to say, no, you will not use my body to pursue this policy. But the civil rights movement, the Vietnam War movement proved that it's only with people's bodies, people's minds, people's hearts, that good policies, that constitutional policies are made in this country. We support the current movement to right the wrong about the policy toward Iraq. We will defend people's movements and people's efforts to bring constitutional and international law to bear on these decisions.
We are pledging to commit civil disobedience or to support those who will commit it in an effort to end this war. The Iraq Pledge of Resistance is being organized in dozens of cities around the country right now. This action will escalate if Congress votes in favor of a war. So I would invite you all, in symbolic defiance of a Congress which seems prepared to vote for war and a president who is clearly thirsting for war, and join us in signing this Pledge of Resistance.
Anyone seeking to sign on to the Pledge of Resistance should email pledgecoordinator@starpower.net. Thanks to WPFW producer Reem Kathuta for this segment. Kelly Campbell's brother-in-law, Craig Scott Amundson, was killed at the Pentagon during the attack of September 11th. She co-founded the group September 11th, Families for Peaceful Tomorrows. Speaking with us earlier this week, Campbell described her group's recent letter to President Bush, demanding that the loss of their loved ones not be used to kill more people.
We took our name, Peaceful Tomorrows, from a quote from Martin Luther King Jr., who said, "Wars are poor chisels for carving out peaceful tomorrows. We must pursue peaceful ends through peaceful means." And if you look at the path that our country has taken in responding to the tragedy of September 11th, first we went to get Osama bin Laden, and we did that by bombing Afghanistan. It's now been a year, and we have no idea where Osama bin Laden is. I know, because I've been to Afghanistan, that there are many innocent people, many children, many women who have suffered under our bombing, that there are children who are missing limbs because of our cluster bombs. Our cluster bombs, which apparently didn't touch Osama bin Laden, but killed 7- and 8-year-old children. Now, with the situation in Iraq, we continually see the Bush administration making insinuations that this is somehow related to September 11th. However, we've seen no evidence that Saddam Hussein or the Iraqi regime has any link to September 11th other than the Bush administration's desire to go to war with Iraq. And we are very concerned that this war will inflame anti-American sentiment around the world, that this kind of unilateral action will really fuel the fires of terrorism, will allow groups like Al-Qaeda to much more easily recruit those who would commit terrorist attacks against Americans. Mm.
So you've actually been to Afghanistan since the U.S. bombing campaign against that country, and you said you saw young children that had been maimed by those bombs. What provoked you, or what prompted you, rather, to go there, to make the trip? Was it September 11th?
On October 7th of last year, we were getting ready for my brother-in-law's memorial service, and as we were about to head out the door to the service, someone turned on the television, and we saw that that was the day our government decided to start bombing Afghanistan. And for me, it was the first time I really felt angry. And I was angry that this day had been taken away from us, this day to talk about Craig and who he was. And yet in the back of my mind, I was wondering, what's happening today? Is today someone in Afghanistan is going to start the same process that my family's going through now? And since the bombing started, I looked, and many of us were looking for news stories about it, to find the stories of families affected by this war, and not seeing much. So when I had the opportunity, and others of us had the opportunity, to travel to Afghanistan in January, we went really to connect with our Afghan sister families, the families who were also victims of September 11th, people who were in the wrong place at the wrong time when the U.S. bombs fell on their houses, killing their children.
Has this whole event transformed your life in any way? How has it touched you as an individual? Would you be pursuing this path? Would you be writing letters to the president had it not been for September 11th? Were you on a political path prior to this?
Prior to this, I worked on environmental issues. I was passionate about that, but it's at a very different level. This is so personal for me, for my partner Barry, whose brother it was that was killed, for his other brother Ryan, and for Craig's wife Amber. This is really the way that we feel comfortable responding to Craig's death and to try to bring some sort of healing not only for ourselves and our family, but to make something positive come out of this tragedy. You know, it's our hope that September 11th can mark a shift in a way of thinking and kind of a consciousness shift in saying violence isn't the way that we should be expressing ourselves to the world. And since September 11th, I've spent virtually all my time working on these issues because it just really feels like the right thing to do.
And we've heard a little bit about your brother-in-law, Craig, through stories that were told to us by his wife, Amber, during our September 11th coverage. But what can you share with us about your brother-in-law, Craig?
Well, I knew Craig for about 9 years. We went to college together at the University of Iowa, and he was a very creative person, a very artistic person. He was a film major, made a lot of goofy movies, starting at a young age, making movies with all the neighborhood kids and getting more sophisticated through college. But he was such a gentle person and such a goofy person and just a really kind person. I remember when Barry and I moved to California, the night before we left, we stayed at Craig's apartment, and we got up in the morning, and he got up at 6 in the morning and made us eggs and coffee and the whole deal. And that was just the kind of person he was, that he was very thoughtful and very caring towards other people. So I really remember that about Craig and feel that Craig would be concerned about other people suffering because of his death.
Hmm. You feel as though you're honoring his legacy by doing this work, perhaps?
Yes, I'd like to think that we are honoring his legacy by doing this work, that we're carrying on the kind of person he was, that was generous, that was kind, that cared about his children and cared about the world.
Hmm. We have a term that we sort of coined, Patriots for Peace, because it seems as though the right wing has claimed the word patriot. But I think there are a lot of Americans who consider themselves Americans who love this country that want to be patriots for peace and not for war.
That's really what I think that Peaceful Tomorrows is all about. We do this because we love our country. We do this because it's important as Americans that we express our views, that we educate ourselves, and that we speak out and have discussions with other Americans and other people around the world. So much of this kind of talk of you're not patriotic if you don't keep your mouth shut, you're not patriotic if you don't toe the line, I think that those people are really missing what the core values of this country are really about. And I think it's important for those of us who are talking about democracy, who are talking about human rights, who are talking about civil liberties, who are talking about, you know, what kind of foreign policy should we have, to remind ourselves that we are Americans and that many of us do this because we love our country.
Kelly Campbell, co-founder of Families for Peaceful Tomorrows. And finally, from Pacifica Station KPFT in Houston, this creative response to the potential war.
The youth are the creators of Peace for Tomorrow. Shannon, a producer for KPFT and youth representative of the Hip Hop Nation, presents a compilation of sounds from the streets, remixed with the Disposable Heroes of Hypocrisy's song, The Winner of the Long Hot Summer, which was released in 1992 as a commentary on the Persian Gulf War.
The fall will always remember, capitulating silence election November, before the winter of the long hot summer. Somewhere in the desert we raised the oil pressure and waited for the weather to get much better for the new winter blowing storm.
Hell for war! Hell for war! Hell for war!
The
decision's already been made. These people have absolutely no influence. The decision has been made. Now they're trying to gather enough reasons to do it. But the decision's been made.
I feel that Bush is a little too pushy with this thing. I think Bush, it is about oil. I think Bush has been involved with oil all of his life. And consequently, he cannot get enough oil.
No blood for oil!
No blood!
No blood for oil!
No blood!
No blood for oil!
No blood!
We watched the tube and read the newspaper. The propaganda of the gas mask worker was the proper slang to whoop up the hatred.
Remember, these people are not nice. They don't care about American values. They don't have the same values. Freedom to them has a different meaning than freedom here.
And what is freedom as you define it, living in America?
Look across the street, what's going on. That's freedom.
Not that we gave Hussein $5 billion, not of our new bed partner, the Syrian, and of course no mention of the Palestine situation. It was amazing how they steamrolled. They said 80% approval, but there was no...
After I went through the Vietnam thing when I was in high school and in college, and I certainly don't want to see this happen unless it's absolutely necessary. I'm not a fan of George Bush at this point. I don't know what to think about the situation because I think he has everybody thoroughly confused at this point.
Not a single TV station expressed dissension or hardly made mention to the censorship of information from a kind of a gentler nation, blinder mentally, retardation, disorientation.
How do you feel about the reporting on this topic?
Definitely in favor of the Bush administration. Even when they question, it seems to me more of one of a tactics, like how to do it properly, rather than whether it should be done at all. They just seem to be kind of rather rattling their sabers and banging in the drums and let's go, go, go. It seems like they see it as an inevitable. I think they really need something like this for their ratings. Unfortunately, I don't see why people have to die in Iraq for that.
Kids don't get their diplomas. They get used for gunboat diplomacy. Disproportionately black or brown we see. Bullet catches for the slave master.
If you look at these people, they're a little older. They're in their 60s and 70s. They remember Vietnam. They certainly don't want another Vietnam.
Pacifica's Peace Watch, produced by Scott Gurian, engineered by Rolando Arrieta, consultant Larry Binsky, associate editor Reem Kathuta. We had help this evening from David Russo of the DC Indie Media Center, production assistance from Sidrek Franklin, and web help from Pete Caracas. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Thank you for listening.
We're blowing up people. And I think peace is possible. As a parent, it's a journey for everyone to find the peace within themselves and to control themselves in situations where they want to lash out.
More bombs dropped in World War II, war in both Asian invasions, New World Order persuasion.